Ladies and gentlemen, now it's Too Late with Alan Mosley.
So much in that
yeah,
one.
Fired up, yeah.
Man, that vocal fry was just because you had you had so much enthusiasm. I enjoyed it though. That's fine. Guys, welcome back for another episode of It's Too Late. I am your host, Alan Mosley, joined as always by the number one producer in late night. It's Dave Willimowski. Dave! Dave, how are you doing, buddy?
Oh my gosh, we're here. It's like Christmas time. It's like red alert Christmas time right now.
It's very much like Christmas time, yes.
Yeah, I'm fired up. I'm ready to go. How you doing, Alan?
I'm doing okay, but I tell you what, it makes me uncomfortable when you're on vacation, but I'm working. That's bullshit.
Yeah, it's weird.
Because I'm having to do something I don't want to do, but now you're required to not do something that you live for. Just tell the truth. Yeah.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
You're already counting down the days until I can go back to work.
I was thinking about stopping in over the weekend, see if they wanted me to do anything.
They're actually going to shoo you away with a broom because you keep on trying to come back to work. Oh, man. Hey, tonight's top story. Did you see this, Dave? Comes to us from Colorado. The Colorado Supreme Court has declared former President Donald Trump ineligible to appear on the ballot in the state for the upcoming 2024 election. Yeah, they're saying he was a part of an insurrection, and that means, according to the 14th Amendment, he doesn't get to be on the ballot, believe it or not. Now, I just want to point out really quick, I hate to get political on the Christmas episode of this show, but, there's a lot of people that were remarking that, the last time the Democrats kept a candidate off the ballot, it was when 10 southern states kept Lincoln off the ballot. Okay, so first of all, that's not actually strictly true. And second of all, yeah, I know that's the best thing the Democrats ever did. Yeah. Yeah, but no, but really, though, why are you trying to sell me on the Democrats? And you see, the other thing is, too, is there's no reason to get too excited about it, because it's going to wind up getting overturned, in the U.S. Supreme Court anyway. But on the slim chance that it is upheld in Colorado and or other states are actively choosing winners and losers, I'm here for it. Let's get this party started. But I do have a message for all my Southern brethren, because this is what I'm afraid is going to happen is the Boogaloo's finally here and we're going to have a civil war and the nation's going to break up, which I'm like, yes, Merry Christmas to me. But what I don't want to have happen is for the Southern states to be like, well, the leftists are going to be in those states, so we're going to be in these states where we have Trump. No. He gets sent off into the ocean along with the rest of them. This is our chance, you guys. We've been under occupation for almost 200 years. The South will rise again. This is it. And we have Colorado's Supreme Court to thank. How about that?
That's interesting.
Yeah. Thank you, Colorado Supreme Court. Hey, don't you laugh. A bunch of my family members died in the Civil War. I think they were prison guards for your family members.
They rolled through and got rolled. Yeah.
Yeah. Hate to see that. Also, some controversy out of the Northeast this week, as Boston Mayor Michelle Wu defended her decision to hold an electeds of color holiday party, one that specifically excludes all white officials. News of the planned event broke after an email inviting only minority officials was accidentally sent to @everyone. Ooh. Conservatives were quick to pounce on the move, denouncing the exclusion of white attendees and wondering aloud, could you imagine if the situation were reversed? Yeah, actually, I could. It would be the most wonderful time of the year. We'd have a little peace on earth.
Oh. Yeah. Well.
She made her list, but she forgot to check it twice.
Oof.
Guess you could say she wasn't dreaming of a white Christmas. All right, so anyway. With the big day just around the corner, we tried to get jolly old Saint Nick himself to come on the show. But you know, yeah, I know, right? Wouldn't that have been a thrill? He's a little busy this time of year. So, we got the next best thing. Ladies and gentlemen, here to give us an update on Christmas all the way from the Far East, give a warm holiday welcome to Asian Santa Claus. Asian Santa Claus, how are you doing tonight?
Alan, why you no doctor?
I'm sorry, Asian Santa. I did go to school to be a doctor, but I dropped out.
I'm disappointed.
What does this mean that I don't get any presents under the tree, Asian Santa?
You get the balut. Balut.
Okay,
do you know what balut is, Alan? Do you
I've
know?
That.
Yeah, I don't know what I don't know. I don't know what that is. I'm scared to look it up live on air. I'll do that during the commercial break. Asian Santa, I'm led to believe that that's a way more jolly look. I'm led to believe that there's literally billions of people in Asia. How do you visit all those homes in one night?
With my kung fu.
With your kung fu, Asian Santa. Okay, well, this is going about exactly the way I expected it would. All right.
Why
are
you no
Asian...
doctor, Dave? Why you no doctor?
Oh, my gosh. I think I've done as good as I can.
Okay. Yeah, you know what? Yeah, Dave, I think Dave's done pretty well for himself, Asian Santa. But listen, one last question before you go, because I know you have a lot of preparations to go. I know that the regular Santa has elves working in his workshop to make all the toys for good girls and boys. How do you get all the toys made?
Little people ninja. Hoya!
I don't think they like to be called little people, Asian Santa.
Dwarves. Dwarf ninjas.
Is dwarves okay? Can you say dwarves?
I guess
that's fine. Yeah. Dwarven ninjas, Asian Santa?
Ask Mary.
Okay.
Yes, you mix up the ninja with the dwarf. Dwarf ninja. Hiya!
Now, when you say mix up, does that mean you train the dwarves to be ninjas, or you take ninjas and breed them with dwarves to make a dwarven ninja?
Both.
Okay, both. All right, well, Asian Santa, I think that's all the time we have for tonight. Is there a final thought you want to leave with our American audiences?
Ho, ho, ho. That's my sister's name.
Okay, all right, Dave, that's good. So anyway, thank you, Asian Santa, for joining us on the show. Jesus Christ. Speaking of Jesus Christ, you know, of course, we talk a lot about Santa Claus and elves and things like that around this time of year. But of course, we know the real reason for the season, don't we, Dave? That is, of course, our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. Dave, do we have a clip of Jesus Christ performing a miracle?
Yeah, we do.
Hallelujah, hallelujah.
Wow. Oh.
He's cured of being it dirty. He must have been
dirt. Yeah,
must have been dirty. Yeah. Well, he would. You know, he would wash people.
Yeah.
One of these days, you're gonna remember that the laugh react helps the silences in between bits,
yeah.
Dave. Speaking of performing miracles, listen to this, guys. You too can climb any mountain by drinking Fox & Sons coffee, which you find at foxandsons.com. If you use promo code ITL, you get 18% off your orders of $25 or more. Shipping's always free, orders over $37.99 at foxandsons.com. I want you to take a look at this, guys. I got a Christmas card in the mail. I got a Christmas card in the mail, and you will never guess who it's from. It's from Steve Fox and the Fox family. Wishing me, oh, you didn't,
Yeah, it's a little awkward. I mean,
oh no.
I mean, it's fine. It's not a big deal.
He just—he probably just thought
you'd that, share it with me. You'd show me.
Yeah, it's to both of us. It even says
that's what I. Yeah.
Yeah. It's to both of us. Well, because yeah, it says there's, yeah, and it even says on the back right here, "Love the ads. Can't wait to meet you this summer, Steve."
Okay.
Yeah, because right. Steve's coming to the live event next year.
Oh yeah, that's cool.
So you can ask him in person why you didn't get a card, Dave.
We got a card.
Maybe.
Good coffee though. Good coffee.
Maybe it has something to do with you saying that his coffee ruins Christmas. Maybe that's why. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you got me.
Yeah, okay. So anyway, that's Fox & Sons Coffee, which you can find at foxandsons.com. Use promo code It's Too Late. You know, just real quick before we take the break, the only mail I've gotten at all in like the last 2 months is a Christmas card from Steve. And I've been getting these monthly letters from the student loan people.
Oh, they're back?
Yeah, they keep on writing in saying, "Hey, so you want to pay your student loans?" And I keep saying, "Guys, get that shit."
A little cringe now at this point.
Yeah, like yeah, guys, come on. I said no, so you just you know, mm-hmm. Yeah, like
take a hint.
Yeah, like this whole hanging on that you're doing. It's like mm-hmm. No thanks. And so you know, then they just disappear for 30 days, and then 30 days goes by. I get another one in the mail, and it's like, "Hey, you want to pay your student loans?" And we just go through this song and dance. I don't know what their deal is, you know? Like, what's wrong with you? Right? Anyway, guys, we're going to be back with the meme of the week in the viewer mail right after this commercial break. There was Dave. You might want to look into that. So I meant to tell you this in the pre-show. I was talking to this girl, right?
Oh.
Yeah. So I was talking to this girl, and she goes, "Hey, did you know that Mercury is in retrograde?"
Oh, run.
I slapped the shit out of her. Okay. Like, don't you ever talk to me that way, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think I nipped it in the bud.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So how'd she take it? She's okay with that?
Yeah, I mean, it was open hand, you know.
Oh, yeah, of course. You're not an animal.
Yeah, right? Like, she has to remain looking exquisite, otherwise I won't even talk to her then, you know?
Wow.
Yeah. So, okay, speaking of things that are exquisite, let me tell you about tonight's other sponsor, which is the Tennessee Hot Sauce Company, which you can find at tnhotsauceco.com. Use promo code It's Too Late, all one word, It's Too Late. You get 10% off your order.
Sweet.
Including for these bad boys, this is the Tennessee Hot Sauce Company Beef Jerky. Yeah, can we get a shot of that, Dave? Can you hit the right button for the first time tonight? Yeah, there you go. Good job.
Oh, yeah,
Dave.
I got it.
All right. So I've been nailing it. The beef jerky. I don't know what you're talking. This stuff right here is like incredibly good and super affordable. Are you kidding me? $8? That's actually
that's killer.
Nuts. Yeah. Yeah, it's out of this freaking world. And so I would get probably 20 of these for my friends and family. I would keep 18 of them and give two, one to you and one to Aaron.
Oh.
Yeah. Well, I only want people who are going to appreciate them, you know? Like, ever given a present to somebody, and after you give it to them, you immediately regret it because you could tell that they didn't give a shit.
Yeah.
That they were like, oh, yeah, that's nice. And you're like, whoa. If you don't want it, just give it back. I'll use it.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, if I get you some Tennessee Hot Sauce Company jerky, and you're like, oh, I don't really like jerky.
Oh, no.
Yeah, you might as well have said Mercury is in retrograde, motherfucker. You're about to get slapped. So anyway, I'm sure Danny appreciates us doing some domestic violence talk during his ad.
Yeah.
But it just
got expected.
It was what was in my heart, you know? All right. Hey, Dave.
Yes, Alan.
What time is it?
It's time for Meme of the Week.
Yo, you had to think about it there for a second, did you? You didn't read the note. Yeah.
Oh, I forgot to open this in the show notes.
My lesbian Wiccan daughter trying to cast a spell to stop the beer bottle I hurled at her head. that's some other shit you can't say. No?
What kind of theme going?
Yeah. Well, you know, the monologue was races. Now the viewer mail is women. Yeah.
Violence towards witchy girls.
Yeah. But we do have an animated bonus meme. Check out the bonus meme. Oh, missed my turn.
What the hell? Oh, that's it.
Yeah, you just come to a dead stop in the interstate because you missed your turn. Just start over, you know?
Yeah, there's only one option in that situation.
Yeah.
Just stop.
Women shouldn't drive.
Oh, well.
Yeah, I said it. It's because her man should be driving for her. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Chivalry. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I meant by that.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, let's answer some viewer mail. It's like we don't even have laugh reacts anymore, you know?
This is late.
You just took them out of the show. That's crazy. First question comes to us tonight from Andrew Avery, who writes, "Dear Alan and Dave, if you threw an Asian down the stairs, would it be Wong on so many levels?"
There's another theme.
That's strangely topical to this episode.
Yeah.
And he wouldn't even know. It's like he knows, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Since we're talking about Asians, let me go ahead and open my fortune.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that.
This is the Christmas fortune.
Oh, this is a special one.
Yeah, this is a special one. All right, your intuition will drive new opportunity.
Oh,
I mean, at least that's an actual fortune, unlike some of the ones we've been. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. That. Predict. Future.
For the people playing the lotto, it's 5, 9, 12, 39, 43, and 53. So, yeah, I'm going to write those down.
43 is my favorite.
I like how 39 and 43 are on there, because I'll be 39 in a year, and then that's it. I won't be any more things.
More of your future there. It's another fortune.
Yeah. Well, it's my intuition. Drives.
Drive you there.
Yeah. Jonathan Carranza writes, "Dear Alan and Dave, what is your favorite and least favorite holiday song?" So Jonathan obviously doesn't watch the show like at all anymore because we've answered this question several times, including like in the last week. But we're just going to do least favorite song. Dominic the Christmas Donkey. Jesus Christ.
Really?
There is, yeah. Okay. You will go to hell if you play that song.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
That's how it happens.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to say that Christmas shoes one.
That's one of the way. Oh, the Christmas shoes one? Like, yeah, mom's dead, so let's buy her shoes that are going to have to go back to the store anyway. Yeah.
Yeah, we don't have any money, but we're going to blow it on some shoes to bury.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. That's ridiculous. You don't even see the feet. It's underneath the...
Yeah.
Stupid. Anyway. Don't put any jewelry on her either. Don't be like, oh, these were her favorite emerald rings. She had emerald rings? No wonder y'all are poor.
Yeah, pawn that.
Yeah. Jesus. All right. Well, I hope that helped, Jonathan. Aaron Kittner writes, Dear Alan and Dave, what is the best gift you've ever gotten for Christmas? Dave, what is the best gift you've ever gotten for Christmas?
Okay, so the most memorable one, and I guess it'd probably be like the best, is because it's a childhood memory. It's like where like we got all the presents and there was one thing we really wanted, but we didn't get it. And then after we're done opening up all the presents, Dad comes out with one last present for the family, and it was a new NES, the Nintendo Ooh. Entertainment System. Yeah.
Yeah.
Fired up.
Yeah. A new print for the family, aka my grades are just yeah. Yeah. I got the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Sewer Lair.
A sewer lair? How's that? Yeah, like you're gonna say like the van. Wow.
No, it's like there's a street on top and there's like a little manhole and a ladder, and then there's like the basement with like the couch and the TV, remember, you know?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, that's yeah, that's boss, man. That's awesome.
Oh yeah. It was baller. Celeste Annis writes, Dear Alan and Dave, which do you put on top of your Christmas tree, an angel or a star? Dave, angel or star?
I don't really know. I'm pretty sure it's a star.
Wow!
Right? I didn't look.
All right, guys, in chat, if you could do @Mary.
Yeah, let me know.
Yeah. It's an angel. Jesus Christ, Dave. My goodness. All right. Multiple members of your family are saying it's an angel, and they seem a little upset about it, to be quite frank.
It's interesting. Now I can picture it. I can picture it. Is it like a little like wooden thing? David has a star on it. Okay.
Oh, my goodness. Hey, Dave, after the show, let's talk, okay?
Oh, yeah. I don't think we have time.
No. Hey, Dave. Hey. Let's talk after the show, okay?
Oh, thanks. Okay.
Right. Matt Lacey, we always had an angel because we're not, you know, heathens.
Yeah.
All right. Yep. Like, you can't worship a star. That's idolatry.
Oh, that's some more witchy shit.
Yeah. You start wondering about the alignment of the planets. And
yeah. They'll ask you, like, what time were you born?
Yeah. Mm. You actually raise your hand up like this first so they can brace themselves.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah. Matt Lacey writes, Dear Alan and Dave, what is your favorite Christmas dinner meat? All right. Are you in Turkey Gang or Ham Nation?
Oh, yeah. Thanksgiving is turkey and Christmas is ham. I feel like that's just how it is.
I'm actually going to say they're both ham because ham is just better.
It is.
Because it said, what's your favorite? It didn't ask you which one do you have to have because you're a conformist. It said which one. So ham. I'm in Ham Nation.
Okay.
Yep. But you bat for both sides. You said for one your switch hitter, Dave.
No, turkey is Thanksgiving, ham is Christmas.
Well, but we learned something.
I prefer ham, but yeah, I'm
okay, so I've heard of that. There some of those people will prefer one, but they'll do both. You're one of those people.
Some people do roasts, like where Celeste has a brisket.
Well, that's not legal in like most states. Yeah. Josh Wright writes, Dear Alan and Dave, since Santa knows when you're sleeping and knows if you're good or bad, is it safe to assume that Santa is a Fed? No, because he actually knows, whereas the Feds are wildly incompetent. Like, Santa's not incompetent, so that means he couldn't. The private sector is way more efficient than the public sector. Like, could you imagine if the Feds were involved with determining who's good and bad and gets presents? It would just...
The wrong house, dead pets, crazy.
Yeah, it'd be out of this world. I mean, I tried to ask Asian Santa how he goes about it, but I don't think he really understood English, to be honest with you. now that we've been through that,
an interpreter, It might have got lost in translation.
Yeah, I'm glad we all got to go through that together. Gary Doxer writes, Dear Alan and Dave, what's your least favorite kind of holiday cookie / treat? What's the one dessert that if someone brings it, you're not going to have a bite?
I'll have a bite of everything.
We've already established. Yeah.
Something, same thing comes up and I'll be like, well, maybe this time, you know, you change, but it'd have to be fruitcake. Yeah. Cause like I'll buy a fruitcake and I'll be like, maybe this one's good. And it's like, no, that's terrible.
Yeah. Yeah. Fruitcake. I feel like fruitcake is too cliche of an answer. That's not going to count. Cause no one's going to bring a fruitcake to our Christmas. So that way that doesn't count. Cause that's beneath even what people would try to pass off, you know?
Yeah. Nobody actually brings those.
Yeah. I would probably say like oatmeal cookies. It's like, why would I have an oatmeal cookie when I can just have a real cookie?
Yeah. That's kind of a low energy, low effort cookie too. It's like, oh, you spent 5 minutes to make these things.
Yeah. Oh, please. They just bought them.
Wow.
Are you kidding me? Yeah. Oh yeah. If you show up to Christmas dinner with something that's in like a plastic tray, it's just out. Goodbye. try again next year when you want to have loved ones.
Oh.
Yeah. Well, this is the South, and of course we're gonna make our own rolls as well. Could you imagine what kind of just absolute fucking monster would make them out of like one of those little things? Little cylinders bag. You just pop open, yeah, bag, and heat them up. That's you're actually the Antichrist if you do that. Make them, yeah,
of course.
Mm-hmm. Of course, yeah. Mm-hmm. I like how you have to really be plugged into the lore for years to get these references.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. D3 asks, Dear Alan and Dad. That's you. No one calls me that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Have you ever had carolers come to your house before? Oh, have you guys ever had carolers come to your house?
No. No.
What?
Who would do that? Like, no. Because actually, I grew up kind of in, like, county, like, near the woods. Yeah. So they would freeze before they got to the next house. So we didn't have that there. And now we're in town, and that's just scary. Nobody's going to do that here.
I have never had carolers come to my house, but embrace yourself for this. Are you sitting down?
I think I'm ready for this.
I've been caroling.
Like, just rogue caroling? Or is this like...
rogue caroling? Like, it has to be registered and licensed?
I don't know. Yeah. Was it like a caroling event? Like, almost like that. Or was it you and a group of friends just went out and started hitting up houses?
We actually did. We didn't go to houses. We went downtown. We went all around downtown during like the Christmas like rush. And
really?
We were caroling. Yeah. Yeah. We did that.
You guys are wild.
Yeah. I was just trying to get some.
Of course.
Yeah. Boy, speaking of that, I've been meaning to talk to you about this boy. He's got some self-esteem problems.
Really?
And we keep on, we're playing hype men over here, right? We keep on telling him, oh, no, you got this. He thinks that he's going to go to a job interview and he's going to say something really stupid and they're going to be like, ugh, oh, God, what an idiot. And I was trying to tell him, like, oh, me and Dave, I'm sure could think of a lot of times that we said something dumb and we're like, oh my God, I can't believe I just said that, you know?
Oh, yeah. Actually, the job I have right now.
Oh, you have right now, yeah.
Well, no, my side hustle. I had to do a phone interview, and I'm really, you know, I'm bad at talking.
Yeah,
so
no shit.
They asked me a question, like viewer mail, and they asked me a question, and I couldn't think of an answer, and there was literal silence for probably like at least 45 seconds to a minute where I couldn't think of an answer, and my interviewer just waited, and I just wanted to shoot myself right there. So, yeah, but I got the job, so.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, all's well that it, so the moral of the story, then, is that it wasn't about that. We all freeze up sometimes, but it's okay. It mm-hmm. works out. Yeah, because it it made me think. This actually happened to me earlier. What was it? No, it was the end of last week. So I had a package deliver at the end of last week, and I delivered it to this house, and I noticed that it had a ramp, which tells you that someone in the house is
handicapped,
physically retarded. Yeah. And so I go up to this house and I leave the package at the door, and it turns out they're home. So they open the door, and it's this sweet lady, in her wheelchair that was struggling to hold her weight, but in her wheelchair. And so she goes, "Oh, thank you so much for dropping off the package." And I'm on my way back, right? Cause I got other places to be. And so I just turn and say, no problem. Thank you. And she said, "Oh, I noticed you've got a little bit of a limp there." Cause you know, I was having this thing with like this nerve thing in my leg. And I was kind of struggling there at the end. And I said to her, like, yeah, I've got a little hurt leg. And then I go, "Yeah, I'm going to wind up like you, huh?"
Oh my God.
This really happened. This is not a joke. And the moment those words came out of my mouth, I thought, we're about to find out how cool this lady is.
Yeah.
or that I don't have to work tomorrow.
Win-win.
Yeah. One or the other. It turns out, I don't think she really got it, mm-hmm. you know? I think she just, like, basically she just heard in the wind of, thank you, you know, like it's just static. and I got in my car and I left. And the moral of the story is everything worked out.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, exactly. Everything's going to work out fine. So I wouldn't worry about it. And last tonight, oh my God, we are so over time. Marilyn Willimowski writes, "Dear Alan and Dave.
Oh no.
Did you make gingerbread houses when you were little? And who makes them with your own children every single year now?"
Oh my God.
Let me go ahead and hit reply on there with the eyes emoji. You know the one I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what that gets. Let me go ahead and throw that on there for Mary. Because that certainly got my attention. All right, Dave, you got something to add about the gingerbread houses?
All right. So as a child, I don't think we ever did one that I can remember. Because I have memories of Christmases, and I don't think we ever did gingerbread house. And we do it now. This one year we got it as a gift from I think our neighbor, and they just did it tonight while I was down here cleaning the studio. Yeah, Mary does it every year, and it didn't even occur to me to get involved. So yeah, I'm sorry.
Yeah, we do it in quotation marks, says Mary. Yeah, my goodness. Right. All right, well maybe Dave and I will have to postpone our talk because it sounds like you've got another meeting.
I got a lot of talks lined up. I got a lot of people that want to talk to me. I'm pretty popular guy.
Guys, we're going to be back with a very special guest, Tom Woods, right after this commercial break. Don't go away. Your ad could be playing right now, reaching thousands of potential customers. Sadly, it's not, but it could be. Find out how to be an advertised sponsor for It's Too Late with Alan Mosley. Email us at info@alanmosley.tv. Welcome back to the show, everybody. Our guest this evening is making his sixth appearance on the show. I really need to look these things up before we start. But he's actually making a second appearance this year, so that's how you know he's pretty much given up on his media appearances. But he finally has a new book coming out, ladies and gentlemen. Actually, already came out. Diary of a Psychosis, How Public Health Disgraced Itself During COVID Mania. You can tell by the font that it's really scary. Tom Woods. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Alan.
Well, I really appreciate you being our test subject for the Christmas episode. As you can see, all the holiday cheer in the background. What about you, Tom? Do you guys have any? This was a great viewer mail question we got this past week. Do you guys have any very unique Christmas traditions that are particular to the Woods household that maybe most people don't do?
You know, unfortunately, not really. I wish, though, that I had at hand pictures of the way our house is decorated. It is, I mean, at least in terms of houses I've been inside, it is the nicest I've ever seen in terms of decorations, because one of my daughters has a real flair for it. My wife has a tremendous work ethic and determination to make the home as comfortable and beautiful as it can be. We just had a big Christmas party for supporters over here, supporters of the podcast. So I don't, I would say maybe it's that increasingly it's trying to make the house look ever more beautiful every single year. But other than that, I think we pretty much do what everybody else does. Sorry to say.
Okay. Well, this will be the ultimate deciding factor. Do you do the classy, traditional, all white light Christmas, or do you do the vibrant, colorful Christmas light type Christmas?
Well, growing up, I liked the colors because any little kid likes colors. Then I was talked into the idea that the white is more classy. And then I started to think, but the white is boring. So I'll compromise with you. I'll do lights that are colored but don't flash. Because I used to do the blink. I used to like the blinking lights as a kid. That's terrible. You got to turn those off. Make them solid. But we have a tree whose lights can go either way. So with the push of a button, we can make them white if we're in that mood, or we can make them multicolored if we're in that mood.
See, everybody's just cheating now. They've got all the LED stuff. You know, back in our day, you know, when your tree just wouldn't come on, you had to check all 2,000 individual lights to see which one wasn't working and take that out of the circuit. Those days are behind us, but I feel like we've lost something in the translation.
I don't know what we've lost. I'm happy to lose whatever it is.
Well, speaking, unfortunately, of things that we've lost, as we talked about here in the intro, finally a new book come out, only 40 years after Real Descent, is Diary of a Psychosis, How Public Health Disgraced Itself During COVID Mania. And I know you also want to mention, too, there's actual... You wrote a new book and then decided to write a follow-up book in secret when people didn't even know the new book was coming out.
Yeah, that's right. So, as you say, you know, there it is. But as it says right on the back cover, right at the bottom here, it actually tells you that when you buy this book, you're entitled to another one for free. And the second one, which you can get through my book website, diaryofcovid.com. The second volume is at least as important as the first one. The second one is called Collateral Damage, Victims of the Lockdown Regime Tell Their Stories. Because, Alan, as you remember, and by the way, no doubt, you could certainly tell people a story of your own, the way what they did to the world harmed you and harmed everybody, but we all have our own individual stories. But as you distinctly will recall, we weren't allowed to tell those stories. You couldn't complain about the restrictions because that meant you were evil, a conspiracy theorist, you wanted to kill your grandma, you were against science. All the whole litany of low IQ arguments would be made against you. And so you were shamed into not telling your story of genuine suffering, of people who missed surgeries or their careers were destroyed or they went through all their savings or their relationships with their families were damaged because the family was split down the middle on the whole matter. So many stories like this, and nobody was allowed to tell them, and that's inhuman. And so what I did was, this has never been done. There is no such book anywhere. I collected some of these stories that had been submitted to me because I'd been writing an email newsletter about this for years, and people were, of their own accord, just sending me things saying, this is what's happening with me. This is what's happened with me. And it's because they want their story to be heard. You might think a tragic story, people would just as soon move on and forget about it. But they just need somebody to know what happened to them. They need somebody to know what was done. And maybe by doing that, we're not only doing justice to them in some way, but we're also stealing our resolve to make sure this never happens again. So that bonus volume, as I say, which is as important as the initial book, you can get that for free at diaryofcovid.com. When you when you buy this one. And you can buy this one from any, whatever outlet you like, doesn't matter. And then at diaryofcovid.com, you get that freebie. You actually get two freebies. I'm only mentioning one.
Well, one of the things, Tom, I'll tell you that here we are some, you know, years removed from everything, and two short of years, that has stuck with me is the fact that, you know, I feel like the prevailing attitude in the mainstream is that even when they started to sort of kind of softly back off and maybe quietly admit on page 14D of your local newspaper that, okay, maybe some of these measures were extreme and maybe the data we were working on wasn't quite correct and yada, yada, yada. But that there are certain things that can't be replaced, right? Like, you know, if you lost income or you didn't get to take a trip or you missed a family gathering, you know, that's not good. And I'm certainly not trying to say that certain people's issues are not worth considering. But there's other things, too. Like, you think of, like, graduations and proms for young people. You think of, you know, elderly people who have since passed away and they're in their final moments. They did not get to share with family, you know, funerals, things like that. Like, precious moments that you can't replace, right? Like, we can't go into 2024 and say, well, let's go do all those things we didn't get to do in 20 or 21. Well, you don't get to do that. They're gone now. And so I guess we'll leave it up to the lawyers and the economists to decide what the monetary value is of things that quite literally can't be replaced. But I'm sure you've got countless stories of people that say that, well, there is no making this right, right? Like, it can't be made right because I can't get back what I lost. It's gone forever.
Well, and of course, in particularly tragic cases, you have cases of suicide, which there were many. And of course, you can't get that back. So it really is quite devastating what's happened, what's been done. To me, the kicker in all this is that it didn't do any good anyway. That even after all that, you say, well, okay, we had to give up many precious things, and we had to give up things we can never ever get back. But at least we saved X lives. No, actually, we didn't. You know, that's the key thing, and it's just impossible to read this book, go through the whole thing, and not agree with me on this, because I've got all the data, I got all the charts. All you got to do is look at it. That's all you have to do is look at it. Compare places that are right next to each other. If you try to compare, let's say, South Dakota and Illinois, people will say, oh, the demographics are so different. It's invalid. The comparison is invalid. All right, whatever. I mean, the thing is, in March 2020, if you had said to people, if there's a state that's not doing any of this stuff and there's another state that is, we should surely and easily be able to tell the difference on a graph as to which is which, right? They would have said, oh, absolutely. The graph's going to be off the charts for one state and it'll be fine for the other. And then it turned out, well, the demographics are different, so you have to adjust for that, when the charts didn't look all that different. You know, so then they had to make all these excuses. They had to say things they wouldn't have said in March 2020. They would have said, if I had said to them in March 2020, do you think we're going to have to introduce a lot of nuance when we're comparing one state with another, if one of them does the measures, the so-called mitigation measures, and one doesn't? They would have said, what are you, out of your mind? We're not going to need any nuance at all. We'll be able to see it jumping right off the page. But of course, now that it doesn't jump off the page, it's, well, don't forget that this place is more dense population-wise, even though population density, it doesn't correlate with any COVID outcome at all, as it turns out. You think it would, it doesn't. None of it makes sense. Well, anyway, so you know what? I'll even be a sport. I'll just look at places right next to each other. Or I'll compare the same place to itself over time. I'll do things like that. So if you look at, let's say, California, Arizona, Nevada, very close to each other, and they had quite different policies. California was anti-scientific the entire time, completely unreasonable, destroyed people's lives. Nevada was somewhere in between as a purple state. I guess that's to be expected. And then Arizona was more open than the other two. And yet, as I show repeatedly, I take segments of time and I say, let's look at the deaths or the hospitalizations, whatever, and they track each other perfectly. So it didn't do anything. It did not do anything. Or if you look at the same state, but different counties have different policies, then you can look at, I mean, the different counties, in many cases are demographically identical. These are the same people, basically. So if I were to do that in California and I were to say, here are the areas that heavily masked and here are the ones that aren't, that or that didn't, again, I wouldn't see any difference at all. Here is Los Angeles County, which had a vaccine mandate to go in and have a sandwich. Here is Orange County that didn't. Absolutely identical. So after a while, you have to come to the conclusion that this stuff isn't doing anything. You know, maybe you think it should, or there's some, you have some sense that it ought to help. Okay, but at some point you got to just look at the charts, and it's not doing anything. And the alleged experts then just persisted in pretending that this was the way to handle it, and that anybody who objected was a weirdo idiot who hated science. All right, well, I got the charts, and they don't.
Well, I definitely want to mention while we're on this topic, talking about adjusting for demographics, this is how you can tell people are really just evil and concerned with power, and they're not really concerned with, you know, public health or being correct, is that if it stands to reason that you may be pouring cold water on their position, then of course we got to adjust for the demographics between South Dakota and Illinois. But, you know, funny thing is, when it comes to a place like, I don't know, the state of Florida, demographic adjustment need not apply. We're just going to look at the straight numbers of Florida and California, and there's absolutely no reason for us to look any deeper. Isn't that right?
Yeah, and of course, over and over and over again, we would get comparisons between California and Florida without bothering to do age adjustment, because we know there's a thousandfold difference in mortality between young and old with this thing. So you have to compare apples to apples. Obviously, if you have a state that's full of old people, they're going to have a bigger problem with an old person disease. I mean, hello? Whereas California, it's like the sixth or seventh youngest state in the entire union. So you would, of course, that they would assume they would do a lot better. So when you did the age adjustment, you found that the difference between them was so trivial as to amount to nothing. But far more important is that on the issue of all-cause mortality, about death rates, period, forget about COVID, because defining a COVID death has always been questionable. So we can get rid of that problem by just looking at excess deaths, all-cause mortality. And we can also, in that way, account for deaths caused by the lockdowns, deaths caused by the disruption to the healthcare system, by this madness and mania. And you find that actually Florida did better than California on that. Florida did better. After all the screaming about Death Santas and he's not scientific and California's doing it right, whatever, then explain that. You know, Florida should be a thousand times worse than California in excess deaths, not better than California.
Well, Tom, I'll tell you one kind of attitude that I've sort of evolved with over time, and you can tell me how you feel about this. You know, there was a time not that long ago, and that when I saw people walking around in public, and I don't mean in 2020, I mean like in the last 6 months to a year, so 2023. If I saw people walking around in public wearing masks, even now, even after everything that's happened, I generally would kind of give them a sideways glance. I would think, these people are the problem. These are the people who are going to say and do whatever they're told by CNN, and they're amongst us. They're in our communities. They're voting. You know, they're the ones shouting us down, and they're the ones cheering on, you know, please, please step on us even harder. But I went to dinner last night with my father, and we had a waitress wearing a mask, and she was the only person in the building that was, but she was wearing a mask, and I recognized her because she's been wearing a mask the whole time. She's been wearing a mask in public since 2020. She's still there. She's still wearing one. But you know what, Tom? I don't feel that rancor towards her anymore. Now I just feel sad for her. I really do, because I feel like her brain has been irreparably broken. She has been changed by the propaganda and the sources, and she bought in on it. And I, you know, I don't have any reason to believe this is some kind of political sycophant. I think that she just is a scared person. And I don't know how you come back from that. But like I said, I don't even feel angry anymore. I feel sad about it. What is your take?
I guess I've drifted a bit in that direction. I still mutter under my breath every time I walk by a masked person. How can you still think that does anything? Have you not noticed that it doesn't seem to matter when other people, whether they wear them or not, or that whole countries stopped wearing them with no difference, or that Scandinavians were basically not wearing them, period, just not wearing them, and we're doing fine? I sometimes think that the reason the Biden people were so concerned about the elimination of the mask mandate on planes, it wasn't because they actually thought we were all going to get sick. It was precisely because they thought we weren't going to get sick. And then the whole thing would be exposed. Well, wait a minute, we got rid of the masks and nothing happened? And indeed, nothing did happen. Believe me, if something major did happen, we would still be hearing about it today.
Sure, yeah.
But as usual, when it goes our way, it doesn't even make it into the paper. But yeah, I can see where you're coming from, but I still feel like, especially now, if you're going to do something as radical as blocking your face, which is the medium of communication human beings use, in not just to be able to express ourselves clearly in a verbal sense, but also with various ways of nonverbal communication, if you're actually going to cover that up, you would think you would at least make sure that's absolutely the right thing to do. Like, does it seem to make any difference? I've noticed that around the world, they don't really seem to be doing it. Has it made any difference? I mean, all that data is right there. You can easily look it up. I mean, listen to one podcast on it. You can find that information. Or you could be aware, just, I don't know, be aware of current events. I mean, the Cochrane Review was a review of the studies on this subject and overwhelmingly came to the conclusion that even the duck masks, the suffocation masks that people wear, I'm not going to call them the other official name. I call them the suffocation masks, because if you can wear one of those for more than a half hour at a time, you're wearing it wrong. Even those, you know, you think, well, this must help. You know, maybe you think that, but it just doesn't. And so once that came out, it was, if it hadn't been obvious already, it should be obvious now, that they just make no difference. And the thing is, what would happen is, I understand why somebody might think they make a difference, because occasionally you would get the media saying, look at how in New Jersey the mask mandate brought the numbers down. And in that was a case, that was one of the rare cases where, by coincidence, the mask mandate was introduced right around the time when the numbers were shortly afterward starting to trend downward. But then they shot way back up, higher than they'd ever been, with the mask practice still continuing. But now you get the opposite result and no follow-up story by anybody. And so, or the CDC would release a study saying, well, we've compared mask mandate versus no mask mandate areas, and it's just crazy, the wild difference and how much healthier the masking area is. And they would graph this section of time. Then in this section of time, the exact opposite would happen for 10 times as long, and there would be no mention of that period of time at all. So there's no way you can possibly convince me that that happened by accident, or that these were people of goodwill who just happened to overlook the next 10 months. Impossible to believe. Or that they wouldn't, it was just, they just overlooked that they probably should have followed up that paper with a correction that, well, I guess we thought masks were doing it, but obviously, as the later data shows, that couldn't be the explanation. We never got any of that. So, yeah, if you're satisfied with the official responses, then maybe you might believe in masks. But I guess I feel like I fault you for that, because you should have a critical enough mind to realize, after these people say things that are repeatedly wrong or that are repeatedly falsified, that maybe you ought to consider looking for dissidents, of whom there was no shortage.
Well, On that note, if you'll indulge me, there's a couple of other topics I wanted to touch on, but this is all going to come full circle on the COVID thing in the book. So Robert F. Kennedy Jr. There's an interesting guy right there, and I had a video clip of his that I thought about playing, but I decided against it just because, I'm going to be totally honest, I can barely understand what the guy is saying in the clip. But this was a guy who, his popularity definitely grew over the last couple of years, precisely because he was a skeptic, right? I mean, this was the national conversation for the last few years, is COVID, lockdowns, mandates, the response. And he was somebody who obviously was very critical of those things. And more power to him. And then, of course, he decides to run for president, and he's bringing in teams of people that names that we would recognize. You think of like a Dennis Kucinich, for instance. But then there's this little dust up over on the other side of the world, and RFK Jr. tends to take pretty much the exact same position that all of the major pieces of the regime would take. And most recently, he had this to say in an interview. RFK said, this is a quote about Palestine. He said, "The Palestinian people are arguably the most pampered people by aid organizations in the history of the world. Israel doesn't owe them anything." As soon as I heard that phrase, Tom, I remembered a very popular quote in our circles. No matter who you vote for, you get John McCain. What do you think, Tom?
Well, this was a disappointment. I mean, I guess we shouldn't have expected it to be that much different, because this is an issue where everybody has to be in lockstep in American society, even the alleged mavericks, with a handful of exceptions. You should have seen, though, the initial tweet in which RFK made clear what his position was. Maybe it was on or after October 7th, 2023. It was the same kind of boilerplate you would have heard from Joe Biden, and the responses from his people were overwhelming. That okay, yes. Forget it. I could disagree with you on a few things, but if you're going to sound like every cookie cutter politician in Washington on this, then there's just no way. Go screw yourself. I mean, it was overwhelming. The whole thread was just overwhelming. So whoever in his circles supported that message either is a very, very small minority, or for some reason isn't on Twitter or something. So yeah. And so to me, that was a big, I mean, I wasn't planning on voting for the guy, but I at least thought, well, he is kind of a maverick, and on some things he said, I think he certainly is. And he has been willing to stand up, obviously, to the Democratic Party and to a lot of powerful forces in our societies, and I do appreciate that. But geez, you could have come out, if you really weren't sure politically what to do, you could have come out with some kind of equivocal statement that just left everybody scratching their heads if you wanted to. But that was not the path he chose.
Well, it makes me think, because I thinking of some of the candidates that are currently running, and I know that you've talked to Vivek a number of times, and he's an interesting guy, to if nothing else. I will applaud, you know, this is the thing, is that every single election cycle that comes around, we can't help but hold some of these people up against someone like a Ron Paul, for instance. You know, we look through our rosy colored glasses at 2008 and 2012 and beyond, and we think of Ron Paul and how good he was on everything. And then you hold these people up next to him, and they're like, oh, they're just posers at best. But at least someone like Vivek is willing to point and laugh in Nikki Haley's face on national television. That's something that I think we can all applaud. But I guess the question that I had here is that, Do you think that any of these people that are running right now are, I'll say, for real, and however you would choose to define that phrase, do you think any of them would genuinely be out of lockstep with the regime on the things that matter most? Or do you think that most all of them would pull kind of like a recent RFK, where they would just ultimately fall in line with that paradigm?
Well, I think probably, much as it pains me to say, probably Ron DeSantis would. He might, because the thing is, when you're 15% different from the worst warmongers in the war party, you're just going to get swept up in it. I mean, that's what I think that's just inevitable. So that's, you know, so and given that he's, with the exception of Israel, he's left people a little bit scratching their heads as to what his foreign policy is. Well, I think that too shows that he's trying to figure out how to balance the fact that Trump already has most of the non-interventionist leaning people, And he has to pick up some Nikki Haley type people. So the best thing he can do is just confuse everybody. But I get why you want to do that politically, but I just wonder, somebody who doesn't want to just say, look, people, I know you're inclined to support X, Y, or Z, but I'm telling you, this isn't any good for our country. You know, we have to be America first. You could come up with all kinds of slogans, all kinds of simple arguments you could make to get people to rethink issues like this. You don't have to have a huge educational campaign of the electorate. You could simply say, look, we've neglected this country for far too long. And then you just make it a Democrat problem. Look what Obama did. Look what Biden's doing. Biden couldn't care less about your neighborhood, but he sure does care about this, that, and the other thing. And there ain't nothing conservative about that. And you come at me, Nikki Haley, if you think that's the conservative position is hearth and home, not going around looking for fights to pick. We don't have the money, the time, or the mental energy for that. We have to expend our resources on things that are close to us and that matter to us. Other people we wish well, but we can't fight their fights for them. You know, it's just like when you're a kid, you can't fight somebody else's fight. It shouldn't have been that hard. So I would say, unfortunately, I just don't have the confidence in him, even though I actually think he's done some genuinely great things. He ran his campaign all wrong. I mean, the messaging has been bad. They've made him look like a boomer when he shouldn't have been. Vivek did way better, partly because Vivek went out of his way to get on our shows. You know, he wanted to talk to Dave Smith and Luke Radowski and me and all of our types of shows. And whereas DeSantis, he wouldn't have touched them with a 10-foot pole. Well, what is that? You know, I mean, so, and that would have been a simple thing for him to do, to reach out to a group he might not have reached otherwise, but he didn't even bother. So, I mean, obviously we know Nikki is already in the tank for these things, as is Chris Christie. So absolutely nothing would change under them. I mean, they will stab you in the back 50 times before breakfast, these people. I mean, they would, whatever the left-wing thing of the day is, they will be against 3% of it. But they will be also trying to ruin your life. So the only wild card, and now Trump's a possibility, but if Trump was going to do it, why didn't he do it last time?
Sure, yeah.
He could have chosen anybody, and he chose all these terrible people that anyone could have told him. These people hate your guts, and they don't support you at all. And then he congratulated himself for firing them. But you wasted 2.5 years. Like, why did you do that? So, oh, but this time I'll get it right. That rings hollow. Really? Maybe. I don't know. But the track record isn't so good. So that leaves you with Vivek. And I know there are a million reasons people have that they don't like Vivek, because he had this job, or he did this thing, or he said that thing, or he's a creature of the WEF, or all these things that are, if you just peel them back, you know, some of them you got to ask him about. Some of them are just BS made up. I keep mentioning my friend Bob Murphy. I'm sure you know him, the economist.
Sure.
We used to host a podcast together. He has a fantastic book called Understanding Money Mechanics. And the WEF praised that book, even though it calls for basically dismantling, you know, all the entire structure around the world. So either they weren't paying attention, or there's a mole in there somewhere, whatever. But I'm not going to look at that and conclude, Bob Murphy is secretly an agent of the WEF. I mean, come on, we are capable of discernment, people.
Well, you know, I feel like we pretty much run the gamut, and I agree. You know, the elephant in the room is definitely that Trump is if you believe the polls these days, you know, he's way ahead in all these polls. You know, if the election were tomorrow and everyone's name on the ballot, I think Trump's just going to win at this point. Be damned, whatever outcome is of his legal concerns. But I agree with you that it's a very rare case, obviously, in American history to have non-sequential terms, But we have a clear track record of what kind of president he would be. He was Operation Warp Speed. He pushed the lockdowns. He was a massive government spender. Tip of the hat to our friends over the 10th Amendment Center, you know, he pursued more federal gun control in 4 years than Obama did in 8. I mean, these are things that if you took away Trump's name and you just put John Doe, all the Republicans would be running for the hills away from this guy. But yet somehow mysteriously, they still support him.
I think that I'll tell you what I think it is. And this is something that a candidate should cultivate. They have a gut feeling that he's fundamentally on their side. Yeah, I can't explain away every single thing he did, or I'll pretend that it was one of his advisors who talked him into it or whatever it is. But I feel like he at least doesn't hate my guts. And in this day and age, that's all I need. I mean, yep, I'll probably be pulling my hair out half the time, but I won't have to feel like he has declared war on my family. And given the alternatives, I'll take that over a guy who wins a policy wonk contest. I think that's the way they're thinking.
Well, speaking of hating our guts, I'm going to read you another quote that I know you saw because I think you shared it. This is from Ari McIntyre, who said, "The side that spent years tearing down statues of founding fathers for social justice would like you to know that statues of Satan are sacred." And of course, that's referencing the recent event of a guy chopping the head off of an interesting idol in what capital was that? I forget what state that even was.
The Iowa state.
Iowa.
Capital.
Okay. Yeah. And of course, that's also in the backdrop of them recently having smelted down the Robert E. Lee statue. Remember, they wanted to tear all down all the statues, but then they said, oh, but we'll move these to a historical site. We're just going to take them off of public land. And then the next thing you know, they're being melted down in a forge. Funny that. So I know that you had shared that quote and I saw it as well, which kind of led me to an interesting question for you is, would this be a good benchmark for national divorce? States where a statue to Satan is allowed in the state capitol versus states where a statue to Satan is not allowed in the state capitol.
Well, the thing is that the statue was allowed in Iowa, and you would think that Iowa would be one of these states that is not exactly in lockstep with what's going on in New York and California,
sure.
But yet they did allow it. That's the thing. They did allow it. And so what made that whole matter interesting was, on the one hand, you had the Republican governor saying, oh, I don't like it either, but, you know, they follow the rules and we all have to follow the rules. And I think a lot of people have come to the conclusion, you know what? I just realized our side is the only side that follows the rules.
Sure.
The other side burns buildings down and tears down statues and shouts people down at public lectures and intimidates people and hires only people who think exactly like themselves. Who's not following the rules here? Like, you know, they're not following the rules, but every time, you know, some offensive thing is done to me, and I don't mean offensive in the stupid, lame 16-year-old girl sense, but things that are done, in other words, as a deliberate provocation to me, when those things happen, well, I have to just follow the rules. So I guess somebody decided, you know, this seems like a double standard where, you know, obviously, yes, I know that the Satanic Temple is just trolling these people and trying to get a rise out of them and whatever. But we all know what that was meant to indicate to them. And I think they decided, you know what, maybe it's our turn to not follow the rules. You know, maybe we've been sitting here like suckers for long enough and we're not going to follow the rules anymore. And now see how you like it. So that is what seems to be happening, is that the idea that we're going to have a neutral public square, that you're going to keep your religious ideas out of it, and we're just going to meet in the public square and argue things out on the basis of reason with neutrality toward everybody's private creeds. It doesn't seem to have worked because nobody really believes in it. I don't think anybody really believes in it. I think instead they all want to sneak their opinions in. And what it generally means is that our side is going to dominate and your side is going to be neutral. It never means both sides will be neutral. It means we want to neutralize you while we push through things that are completely at odds and everything with everything you believe in. So that is what happened there.
Well, one of the last times you were on the show, one of the things that we briefly discussed was the idea that federalism, of course, had been taking a beating for a long time. But you can't really say that federalism as a concept was completely dead in America, because you look in the age of COVID, where some states were notably different than others. And that's how the system works, right? I mean, at least in theory, that's how it should. I'm cautiously optimistic, Tom, and you can tell me if what you think. When I see stories like that with the statue and then ultimately with its tragic downfall, I'm cautiously optimistic that the spirit of federalism that sort of reemerged during COVID, where some states drew their line in the sand and said, we're not going to go along with the feds or with other states because we just patently disagree with their worldview, that spirit may continue on into some other topics. Do you feel like there's at least a glimmer of hope there, or are we just going to be right back to ground zero here in another year or two?
I think there's a glimmer of hope about it, because I don't know what's going to happen in 2024, but I think progressives thought that the side opposing them was going to wither and die faster than it has. And in fact, it hasn't withered or died. And so I think they're going to be looking for solutions too, and that may involve state level resistance of one kind or another. Now, that doesn't mean that they're going to be in general, in principle, in support of states exercising powers that they're supposed to be able to exercise, because I think we're dealing with people who have no general principles. Their principle, such as it is simply whatever advances my cause, I'm going to favor. So it doesn't mean they're going to turn around and say, oh, sure, Alan Mosley in Tennessee can do whatever Tennessee wants to do. There's no guarantee of that, but I think the genie's out of the bottle. We're having a lot of conversations about this. We've seen that it's not the end of the world if one state does one thing and one does another. We've seen that in a variety of issues. And we've seen it in a variety of periods of time when, COVID was dealt with quite differently in some places. So, and I think also, given that you have a country that is so divided, where you have maybe 20% of people who are indifferent, but you have 40% and 40% of people who are really at loggerheads with each other, they can try to seize hold of the federal government and impose their whole agenda on everybody, but I'm not sure that'll work. And I think the result may indeed be an inadvertently revived federalism.
Well, one last point I wanted to make, because, of course, you're down there in Florida. I'm here in Tennessee. You know, the wanton violence towards Satan worship aside, if you were to only listen to the mainstream, if you only got your information from CNN or Washington Post, you would think that these are the violent machinations of an uneducated, ignorant minority of conservatives. You know, January 7th is an insurrection. You know, everyone mask up, stay safe. You would believe that you're relatively alone in this fight. And yet, when you look at, you want to talk about demographics, when you look at population changes, when you look at states like New York, Illinois, and California going way down in population, which, by the way, if they've got everything figured out, you would think those would be just bastions of health and liberty, and everyone would want to live there. And yet, everywhere I look, I'm seeing out-of-state license plates when I'm driving around town, and I'm sure you see a lot of that there in Florida. The states that were precisely on the, quote, wrong side of history, as would be told by someone like a Gavin Newsom, those states are thriving. Those states are having huge bursts in economic prosperity because of, population growth. And yet the states that supposedly are on the side of science and law and order, as the Biden regime would have it, those states are declining. Those states are losing tax base. And I think that that's where it's really going to matter to them in the end, right? They're losing tax base. That's all they would really care about. So those people would have you believe that, red America is just a wasteland and they're all going to die off and kill grandma here of their own cognizance soon enough. And yet everyone is moving there. Or I shouldn't say everyone, but the numbers bear that out. So it would seem to me that if you could cut off the noise and you just watched, as Milton Friedman would say, people vote with their feet, I think you see that that 20% indifferent, as you put it, that those are the people that are kind of in the middle between those 40s that are at loggerheads, those people tend to be largely drifting one way. I just can't help but notice that.
That helps, certainly. I think that for some people in the so-called middle, and I just can't imagine looking around at society today and saying, I think I need to be right in the middle of this. But
yeah, a moderate, okay. Sure.
Yeah. But it does seem like the left has overreached to some degree. That I do think some people are saying, yeah, there's a lot of violence. There are double standards, obviously, everywhere. And I also find that places run by certain kinds of people with certain kinds of ideologies seem less livable. I had Larry Elder on my show. And of course, as you know, he ran as a Republican against Gavin Newsom.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, you know, in effect, we were talking about an anecdote in his book where he was talking with a couple of older ladies he met in a diner, and they hadn't voted for him. And yet they had every one of his concerns, every one. But the last thing on earth they were going to do was vote for a Republican. I mean, my God, I would rather suffer and be miserable than vote for a guy who might have, you know, 10% chance of fixing things. But yeah, I mean, there are good. It's just that I'm not 100% certain that the Federalist solution will take root. That's the thing. And so I do worry that even if some states become stronger economically and become magnets for migration from other states, that you could still get a very hardcore left party coming in and saying, well, we don't care about your stupid state. It's our job to re-educate you stupid rubes, and you are going to follow whatever the federal policy is. So I don't know. I don't know if it's too little too late. That's my worry.
Well, we'll wrap up and bring this thing full circle. So to go back on the potential candidates and the Washington, D.C. angle, a popular question is that people love to ask, well, who's the closest to Ron Paul? Which of these people is the most like Ron Paul? Well, I'm not going to ask a question quite that cliche. I'm going to go equal but a little bit further. Is there anybody in Washington, D.C. right now that if you found out, let's say 2028, we won't even talk about this coming year. If you found out, is there anyone in Washington, D.C. right now that if you found out they were running for president next time round, you would unequivocally support them and tell everyone else to do the same? Don't worry about if they have a chance. Just if they did, you would say, we have to support this guy.
Yeah, I mean, I guess in my case, it would be Thomas Massie. I think we would have to support him. I mean, not have to. You do what you want. but I certainly would. I'm sure now I'll get, you know, my inbox filled with, but what about this vote, you know, on December 3rd, 2017 or something? You know, okay, I bet you could probably find some things that I don't like. But, you know, when you get to be, you start to get a little older, you come to the conclusion that, you know, in this world, especially a world as divided as ours, you're not going to get everything you want. You're not. You're going to have to live with getting some things and not getting others. I mean, you can deny that all you like, but that is a fact. You're going to have to accept that you won't get everything. So in light of that absolutely incontrovertible fact, then you have to adjust your behavior and your expectations accordingly of what should I do then to maximize what I do get, you know, to maximize the likelihood that things that matter to me will move in a favorable direction.
Well, there is no better episode than the Christmas episode to have Tom Woods come on and tell the audience you're not going to get everything you want, so adjust your behavior accordingly. Tom, where can people go to support you and check out your new book?
Well, the best place to go, because it is the world's greatest website, is diaryofcovid.com. Because I'm very proud of the book. You're gonna be like a kid in a candy store reading it, because it just smashes the bad guys so hard. And it, you know, yes, I know that, you know, you have friends who just aren't going to listen, but have your friends recommend a book for you to read. And then you just switch, or you say, look, I just want you to read these three chapters. I'll read three chapters of something you want me to read. And they'll say, well, okay, that's fair. And I guarantee you, dear viewer, I guarantee you that my book that you'll be giving them is way better than what they're going to give you. And so at the end of the whole thing, you don't have to worry who's going to come out ahead. But also, diaryofcovid.com at the top also has a really great 2-minute video. And it's got in there a couple of occasions when major people in public health were, for a change, actually asked a challenging question. And man, are they bad at answering them. No wonder they only got softballs all the time. They're terrible at answering challenging questions. So I got that up there, and I think you'll like it. But as I say, you can also get that free companion volume that collects together the stories no one was allowed to hear. But if we're decent human beings, we will sit and hear them. So diaryofcovid.com, and thank you very much, Alan.
Well, Tom, as you know, we got to get you out of here on this one. Is a fruitcake a cake or a bread?
Well, you know what, Alan? This one I think I'll have a hard time answering because I've never actually interacted with one.
Okay.
Well, actually, you know what? Hold on a minute. We got a fruitcake as a gift this year from somebody. I won't say who. And when we got it, we thought, is this a joke? Don't you know that every single person on earth jokes about fruitcakes?
Sure.
And you're actually giving us one? Unironically? Yes. But it's still in the tin. I have never interacted with one because no one has thought to send me one. What if we pause the video and I'll go down and get the fruitcake and I will examine it in front of you and give you my answer?
I'll tell you what, you go ahead and run it because I'm always loath to do video editing. But you go get the fruitcake and I will wait right here.
You entertain the audience for
okay.
A minute.
All right.
All right. You hold on 1 second.
Okay. All right.
And you see, I'm actually wearing, you know, like dressy pants. I'm not the secretly wearing shorts guy.
Yeah.
A few moments later.
In an artist rendition right there.
I'm back here. I got the cake.
Okay. All right.
Or the or whatever we're going to call it.
I was just telling the audience that this is the second time I've had you on the show and me look at an empty chair for some weird reason.
That's a good point. All right. So here's the tin.
Okay.
Right here.
Okay. Collins Street Bakery, very popular.
Yep. So now we're going to open it up. Okay, so it looks like, I'll actually take it out of the tin.
It looks like you could build a house with it. That means it's a fruitcake.
Yeah, so this is what we have here.
Okay.
So, all right, so it looks, I mean, it feels kind of squishy. I'm going to open it.
All right.
Take the shrink wrap off. So in case we still have any viewers,
while you were gone, I was telling the audience that in 6 years of trying, I don't think I've ever given you the affirmative on any of these questions. So I'm really excited. This could be the one.
Oh my gosh. This looks absolutely hideous. All right. I'm going to take a piece of it out.
All right.
Well, the thing is, it is sliced very much like a cake, right? You wouldn't slice bread in a triangular way, in a circular thing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, but does it taste like bread? You're not going to make me take a bite of this, are you?
I mean, that's up to you. I want you to have all the information you need to make the right decision. Mm. I feel like your face says it all.
I think because of the presentation and because of the sweetness. I mean, yes, I know there's raisin bread and banana bread and stuff, but I think this rises to a level of sweetness and combine that with the presentation that I think does qualify it as a cake.
All right. So your final answer is fruitcake is a cake.
Yes, it is.
That is correct. Oh, Tom Woods is now 1 of 6. A fruitcake is, in fact, a cake. By the way, it says cake in the name. That might be the first giveaway. But, Tom, I want you to know this is not one of my bullshit made-up questions. This is actually a culinary definition. Fruitcake is leavened with sugar rather than, you know, baked with flour the way a bread would be. So by culinary standards, a fruitcake is a cake.
Well, can't argue with that.
All right, on that note, Merry Christmas, Tom. Thank you for being here with us.
Same to you, Alan.
Guys, we're going to be back to wrap up the show right after this commercial break. Don't go away.
If you're enjoying tonight's show, consider supporting the program by becoming a member of our Patreon. That's over at patreon.com/AlanMosley.
A merry little Christmas. Let your heart be light. From now on, our troubles will be out of sight. Have yourself a merry little Christmas. Make the Yuletide gay. From now on, our troubles will be miles away. Happy golden days of yore. And faithful friends who are dear to us, gather near to us once more. Through the years, we all will be together. The fates allow. Hang your shining star upon the highest bough, and have yourself a merry little
good.
Merry Christmas, Dave.
Oh, thank you. Merry Christmas, Alan.
Hey, are we doing an episode next week?
Oh, wow. I was ready for after party question, but I mean, I guess that's kind of up in the air. I mean,
Merry Christmas, Mary.
Merry Christmas,
well, I guess
Alan.
It's Dave Christmas, Mary, since Mary's already in there.
Oh, yeah. Merry little Christmas.